Awesome. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our Canine Nose Time Chats. This morning, I was talking to one of the instructors at Canine Nose Time this week, Alison, and the topic came up of sort of, you know, how we approach training, and it sort of led to that. I was like, wow, that's a really good idea. I really want to discuss training with intent. And that sort of, it didn't come up. That's just what I've sort of decided it's called for how we're structuring today, I guess. But it's a really interesting topic, because it's something we see so much and we do ourselves. It's something I do myself. So I'm really aware of how important it is to train correctly and with good intentions, and not just, you know, especially when it comes to scent work. I think it applies to dog training across the board, but really when it comes to scent work, I think it's really important. And I guess what I mean by that when I say training with intent is, and there's a quote, apparently it's an old IPO saying, I looked up to try and credit it to someone. I think I heard it from Glenn Cook, but no training is better than bad training. And that really resonated with me. That we really think about how we're training and how we're giving that information across to our dog, because it's so easy to throw a couple of hides out or show up to class and just you're in a rush and you've run into class and you haven't really thought about all the little bits and pieces that lead up to that. So I guess I'd like to start, if anyone has any, I guess, things that you notice yourself doing or common problems that we sort of bring on to ourselves when we're training without intent.
I really like that quote.
It's good.
Yeah, because I think we can do more damage to our overall training plan. If we actually don't plan and consider what we are actually trying to achieve in each training session. And I think you're right. I think it goes for scent work or training any particular skill or discipline. And like with nose work, like you say, it's kind of such an easy thing to kind of kill some time, just run some hides. And I actually think that's okay if you are doing that to kind of burn off your dog's energy or serve some sort of enrichment purpose, as long as that's what you know you're actually doing.
Well, that's what you just nailed there, right? You still have a goal in mind with even if you're just throwing out some hides.
Mm.
If the goal is for, you know, enrichment or for exposing the dog to more environment or whatever it is, there's still a goal there.
Yep.
It's when there's no goal at all. I think that we can run into trouble just throwing out some hides.
And the cool thing with nose work is that there is always something to work on. Like there's literally like you can work on hides, you can work on thresholds, you can work on distractions, you can work on exposure to new environments. There's endless things you can add just to one session at a time.
I think that is one of the amazing things about it too. Like we have been, and a lot of you in the group today have been doing, I think I started a decade ago now, and that sounds just, you know, crazy. And I still feel like there is so much to learn and I'm just scratching the surface. And every time, every, you know, semester, the term we do in class, there's something else that I'm just going, the dogs are either blowing my mind or there's, you know, new concepts to learn, new things we're learning from people, new things we're learning for dogs, changing how we train. It's all, it's never ending. It's a never ending learning. And that's what I love about this, you know, sport, activity, recreation, you know, it's pretty amazing. But I written down a few things. I'm sure there's so many things you guys can add to this, and please chime in if you think of something that or you see. I think it's really pertinent for instructors as well, especially when we take our dogs to class or even when we're quite experienced, a lot of you are really experienced handlers, it's easy to get complacent in your training. And I know on Thursday mornings, I take my mum's dog to the class I do with Danielle. And I did that class on purpose so that I could, you know, relax, take the time to make sure that I focus on training that dog with intent. Because I know if I throw my dog into another class that I'm taking, and it is often like, you know, you feel guilty, you're holding the class up and you're like, okay, I'll just rush through. And you miss all of these little building blocks that are really important in how you set up your search and how you're rewarding and all the rest of it. So I wanted to go through some of the mistakes that, you know, because I've learned by my own mistakes. And I think most instructors you'll speak to will not put their own dog in a class that they're running unless they really have to. And that's one of the reasons, is because you just end up making a, you know, you're not focused on your dog, you're focused on other people's dogs, and you're not focused on your own routines and, you know, all the rest of it. So it, you just take those shortcuts. And that's probably the main point, is not taking shortcuts when you are training. And because it does, it compromises your training, and nobody benefits in the end. So I guess, what exactly are we talking about when we say training with intent, and the mistakes that we can make? You know, the biggest one I see in class is dogs peeing in the search area. And, you know, the first thing I say is, oh, did you get to take your dog to the toilet before you came in to search? And the majority of people will say, and I'm not pointing fingers at anyone here, because this is such a common response, is I took my dog to the toilet before, but when we got here, they went to the toilet like 10 times. They shouldn't need to go anymore. And that is the response I hear more than any other response. And it's sort of like, yeah, but did you take them just before they did this run? Or, you know, it's pee search pee is something that is really, has really helped me and my dog, because she's a marker, and just establishing some of that routine. And that can lead to a different discussion about, you know, some dogs train with, you know, once the harness is on, there's no more peeing, or they take their dog out to pee, put their dog back in the car, then get them out. You know, there's all different strategies, but whatever that strategy is you're using, it's really important that you follow through those little steps every single time. And that's one that I think is really, you know, training with intent, you really have to follow through with that routine. And not worry if you're holding a class up or if you're holding the next person up, because your instructor would rather that your dog and your team is successful and training, you know, correctly. Any other things that you can sort of think of that we compromise our own training with when we sort of rush through?
No, I totally agree with the peeing one. It's funny because in class, you may have noticed my dogs don't generally pee in searches. However, yeah, they do at home, in home searches in the garden, if I haven't been thoughtful about getting their toileting sorted. So yeah, I think it's just being thoughtful as you're setting up a search, before your search, with your search routine.
Yeah. And it does take extra time, and it can be a little frustrating. And, you know, you do feel like you're holding everyone up, but at the end of the day, we're there for our dog. So, I think that is, that's one of the biggest ones. The other one that I think is really important, and if for those of you that are on mute, everybody comes in on mute and with no video, you're welcome to, you know, unmute yourself so that you can join in. The other one I think is really important is the start line procedure. And when we're sort of in a rush and we come in from the car, and, you know, it's often when it's the first run of the day, people haven't really set themselves up, and they come in and they start their dog you know, straight away, and their lead isn't even, you know, correct. The, you know, the dog hasn't been set up properly. They might have their harness on, or they might have put it on, you know, at the last minute at the start line. And I think that's a dog-to-dog scenario as well. I've definitely merged. I used to put my dog's harness on at the start line because of that context I needed for the, because she's the marker. But I have started doing that now a little bit further back. And I mean, like, outside the door. So, you know, when we're quite a way away from the search area. And it's really helped me have a little bit more intent with my searching, because when I come into that start line now, the only thing I'm really thinking about is my dog entering the search area and am I ready? Like, there's, and looking at the search area and planning that search, I'm not thinking about unstrapping her from her harness and, you know, doing all these other extra things, which is really, it's definitely helped me in both of my dogs, especially with my nervous dog too, because, you know, I'm not fiddling around with harnesses and collars at the start line. And that has, that's something I've changed in the last year or two that's really made a difference. Because if you set yourself up correctly, the rest of the search is more likely to go smoothly.
Yeah, and I think you've raised another issue that, for my dogs, that because they're sensitive dogs, it's almost like they don't need that pee routine, or the equipment routine, but they need a routine that lets them take a breath. Mm. I'm always really happy when I see Rory do a shake off just before we start, because I know that he's kind of shaking off that little bit of tension, and it sets him up for success from the start line. So looking out for the things that get your dog comfortable, I think, is really important.
I almost feel like you and Natalie have that on command, the shake off, because they both, Pippin and Rory, will both do a shake off at the start line.
Rory's is a bit on cue. But I can only cue it when I can kind of see that he almost wants to do it, and then I can cue it. But it is helpful to get him to do that.
Yeah, because it almost looks like he gets his head in the game then too.
Yeah.
That, I think the start line procedure is really good for the dogs too, just to, like, yeah, exactly, you said, sort of give them that sort of, you know, breath. They have a look, they understand what we're doing. You know, we're not pulling them back by putting their harness on or doing all these other things. Where that's something I used to do. I used to put my dog's harness on right at that start line. And that was all I was thinking about, was putting my dog's harness on. And all my dog was thinking about was, oh my goodness, what's taking you so long? There's a search area right here. So, that was definitely, yeah. And every dog is different. I would never say that, you know, that's the thing everybody should do, because there's definitely there's, you know, different things work for different dogs. Karen just says Mac doesn't do shake off, he does a lot of displacement with fluffing around until he is comfortable. If I rush him, he'll do a nervous pee. Yeah, and that's just part of our dog's sort of routines, isn't it?
Yeah, I definitely think we shouldn't be rushing the sensitive dogs. Mm-hmm. And often they just need to just also, like, we talk about how we need to take in the search area and plan out what we're going to do, but I think it's important that the dogs can see, just take a minute to look at the search area that they're about to enter themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know that we did the interior trial down at
Wollongong.
Thank you, Wollongong. Yes. I actually set Ranger up, because we don't do a lot of searching together, especially in different strange places. He's a highly reactive and very nervous dog. But I set him up way sort of before when we did the practice boxes. And then, you know, he was already on his working lead and we just hung out. And, you know, by the time we walked up to that start line, that was all I could take a deep breath, and all I had to do was give him the command. Mm. And it was such a refreshing, like, I remember thinking to myself going, oh, this is so much easier than what I used to do. Like, for the dog too, like, it was for both of us, just going, this is fun. Like, it was actually really good. It was, I think that's one of the most positive changes I've made for in those work. But yeah, so the other thing I wanted to talk about was setting, when we set ourselves up, is make sure our treats are ready. And this is funny because it was sort of funny because I see a lot of times in class, particularly on the first run when people will come into class, and I've done it before, so, you know, no finger pointing there, haven't we all, is they'll come into class, they do the rest of, you know, they're obviously a bit flustered, rushing or whatever it is, come into, dog hits the first hide, expectation of reward for the dog is, you know, fairly high, and the handler is going, oh, and faffing around with their treat pouch, undoing their Ziploc or whatever, because they're just not ready. And I think that is another really important thing, is to make sure that your treats are actually ready to reward your dog when you get to that first hide. And it's surprising how much it happens in class. And even for experienced dogs, we've spoken about how easy it is for dogs to learn new behaviors and how quickly they learn it, and how quickly we can frustrate them by that delay. So I think that's another one that's very, really important, is to make sure that your treats are ready and good to go. And the other one is, I sort of said before about having your dog's head in the game, I also think it's really important to have the human's head in the game. And what I mean by that is being able to walk into a search area and look at the search area and take that in as part of your start line routine as well, so that there's not all these other details that you're focusing on, but you're looking at the search area saying, you know, what's my plan? Which direction am I going? When I get to source, reward your dog and moving along, and having that sort of pre-planned out in your mind, because often we get to that first reward, first hide, reward your dog, and then it's like somewhere the communication breaks down, and moving on from that first hide to the second one is often, there's some sort of conflict is the wrong word, but miscommunication between the dog and the handler, and that smooth sort of transition is lost somewhere along the way. And it's definitely something we need to practice more in training as well, is rewarding and moving along in a fluid motion. Somewhere the lead gets, you know, messed up. People, when they come into reward, they step on the lead or they don't wheel it in properly, which means that you also can't take off properly. And I think I've got a video on this. I'll write it down because I always say this and I never do it. So, video on moving on from a hide. But I think that's part of being ready and prepared at the start line for that case, for as soon as that happens, moving on from that transition. And you could do a whole topic and a whole discussion just on each of these points, I think.
It's almost like when you talk, I know exactly what you're talking about in that example, and it's almost like the dogs, like on that first hide, they don't quite know what the expectation is. Are we just going to hang out here? Do you want me to move off? Is that the end of search? And the handler, like the hesitation and the lack of being certain about what is going to happen, it's like on both parts, the dog and the handler. So that's where the handler, if they do have that plan, and if they are being intentional about what's going to happen, it helps support the dog in whatever you are wanting that dog to do next.
Yeah. And it's also adding into that whether it's a known or an unknown hide.
Mm.
So if you know where the hide is, you know, that's more the training for the dog, right? And that's us being able to take advantage of giving them that information to come in. We know where the hide is. We should also know where we're going to open up the space next. So that is a really good opportunity to practice that, intentional, fast rewarding, opening up the next space to the dog, already planning ahead of how you're going to manage that. And I think all of these are little things that, you know, we need to incorporate into our training even more, rather than just sort of taking it for granted and doing it haphazardly. If it's an unknown hide, it's just as important, really, because, yeah, that's the training for the handler. But that's when you can see the gaps in your training too, and like, okay, yeah, I'm really not managing moving on from that first hide really well, or because it will come as more of a surprise, obviously.
Yeah, absolutely. And you may not have positioned where you are in a way that will help the dog move on, whereas if it was a known hide, you probably would.
Yeah. So it's making sure that we're ready for whatever happens, and it's thinking that little bit further ahead. And I think that start line routine, whatever it is, whether you are putting your dog's harness on at the start line or you're not, is making sure that you already have thought just a couple of steps ahead to make sure that whatever is happening happens fluidly.
And just on this a bit further, one thing I really think I need with Rory is a very clear sort of end of search. We're leaving the search area. Pattern routine, because I feel like sometimes he is a bit confused. Are we still searching? Are we not? That's something I'm planning to work on at the moment.
And that's another individual. That's a really good point, is the finish procedure as well. And I think that depends on what type of dog you have as well and what type of team you're working, and everybody's will be different. Like finish to me, I say finish to my dog. Luckily, it's the same word that the judges like to hear. So it's just become that routine. I'm like, finished, back to the car. Or, you know, some people, their dog is a little bit like, well, I don't want to go back to the car. So it's whatever your finish routine is to make sure that that is positive and productive for your dog as well. And yeah, whether it's feeding your dog or playing with a toy back to the car, or, you know, whatever that is, that it happens very intentional as well. And I think the main point from this conversation as well is to make sure that all these little things we do in our own training at home, because it's so easy to go, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm just putting out some hides in the backyard, or, you know, I'll just put out some hides, and if my dog falls over them on the walk, that's great. I think that there's places and times for that with purpose. But when you're in class, or if you're doing an intentional training session, I think they all have to have a goal and something that you're working on in particular. And you don't have to work on all of these things at the one time. You know, you set your search up and you work on just your start line routine. And in that case, just have one hide, don't overcomplicate it. And that would be my training suggestions for working on these things. It's hard to work on them all at once. And just because we've been doing nose work for quite some time doesn't necessarily mean we have perfected all of these little things. I know I haven't. There's still a lot of room. We can be breaking down these parts of the search and training them, focusing on them in individual searches. So for one search, we focus on moving on from the first hide to the second hide. We still want to try and get all the rest of it right, but really focus on making that the goal for that search. Are there any other things that I think we've sort of gone through the whole right from the start to the finish there, haven't we?
Yeah, we actually have.
We've really covered quite a lot there. Actually, that's quite good timing. But is there anything else anyone would like to add to that? To our search patterns or training with intent? There's probably a lot of things that we can add. But as far as the structure of the search sort of goes, we've gone right from the car to right going back to the car. So that was good.
Yeah, I guess it's just when you are doing the backyard training, just don't miss out on the opportunities to practice all these little bits and pieces.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, sometimes it is nice to have a, you know, just a relaxed search and take away some of the structure and all the rest of it, but making sure you're doing it, that making the right decisions for your dog as well. In, you know, for my dog that is a marker, it's not productive for her to have a big search where she's most likely to mark. You know, or if she does, you know, I still want her to wear her harness because that gives her context. Where for my other boy, it doesn't, it's not as important for him to wear a harness every single time we search, because they're just different dogs. Karen just said, the distractor thing I mentioned the other day with it being their food reward as distractor is a good one to discuss, but maybe for another day. Yeah, we'll do it. We should do another talk on distractors, actually, because there's quite a lot we could add in training strategies as well. But yeah, okay. Well, if there's nothing anyone else would like to add, I think it was just important to highlight some of these little things that we need to think about before we start a run with our dog, or at least be aware of. You know, I don't think it's possible to get it right all the time. But yeah, just make sure that they're in the back of our mind. You know, our treats are ready, and now, you know, we're ready to wind the lead in to reward our dog, or whatever your routine is with you and your dog, that you have thought about it beforehand, and it's not like a last minute, oh my goodness, what am I going to do? And my treats are still locked in there. Ziploc inside my treat pouch.
That honestly happens to me all the time. But I'm very grateful that my dogs aren't ever distracted by me fiddling with my food pouch, because I do it so much.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Yeah. I generally have my hand either in my pocket or in my food pouch anyway. So at some level they have to be a bit desensitized to it, right? But yeah, every dog is different. You know, there's no one rule for nose work or for individual teams. So some of these suggestions will apply to some people and some teams and not to everyone. But hopefully it's given everyone just some food for thought about how you can train your dog a little bit more intentionally. And don't forget about that over holidays when you're not in class, is to keep those skills up, those little skills. So, all right, well, we might finish on that note.
Thanks, Socia.
No worries.